each and every Wednesday evening on your community radio station. Just visiting? Got friends here from away? You can take us home with you no matter where you live. Live on the web, streaming weru.org.
Support for WERU provided by the Village Soup Journal and the Bar Harbor Times, on newsstands every week serving Waldo and Hancock counties, or online at waldo.villagesoup.com and barharbortimes.com.
Okay, you are listening to a special WERU live call-in show on the issue of the liquefied propane gas facility that DCP Midstream is proposing for Searsport, Maine, out on Mack Point. It's a massive scale development, and it's generated a lot of controversy in the town, splitting the townspeople in both directions, pro and con, and also leaving a lot of people in the surrounding areas wondering about whether or not they have any say and whether or not the process goes through. And at present, it seems like the answer to that is a definitive no. We're going to go ahead and take a minute to hear a clip from, since we've been talking about safety, from the safety clip from DCP Midstream talking about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago at a public meeting that they had in Searsport. Let them say what they have to say about their public safety or their safety record.
In operations, the most important part of that to me is safety. If you don't want to operate safely, that's really not a good thing. And with this material, we have operated since 1995, seven terminals without an incident in any of the facilities ever. We have an impeccable safety record. That's our responsibility. I take that responsibility very seriously. That's my main responsibility. We accomplish that by training our employees to the highest standards in the industry. The regulatory requirement is 3-year recertification on the training. We recertify our employees annually. We feel that training is the key to success in operations and safety. The industry is highly regulated. We follow those regulations and we exceed them with DCP standards. The facility itself is very, very safe in engineering. There is a system in this facility called the Total Product Control System. What that system does is it allows us to segregate, to isolate, and to shut down any or all of the system with less than 30 seconds if necessary. There's gonna be automatic valves throughout the facility, and those automatic valves have fail-safes so that they're a backup system. And there's fail-safes to that. There's many fail-safes in this system. It's redundancy and safety. It's part of the system, and it helps us accomplish the high levels of safety that we have. And that's only represented by operating since 1995 without an incident in any one of our facilities. And here in Auburn, Maine, we've operated a facility since 1998. And two of my employees are here tonight. You can speak with them freely afterwards. Without an incident, we take our responsibility of being a good community citizen very, very seriously. We go out and we listen to what your needs are. We will partner with the local emergency services folks. We will provide training and support and listen to their needs. We will do this on a regular, reoccurring basis if we are able to build this project.
Okay, that's Jeff Hertall. He oversees a propane, their propane operations for DCP Midstream in the Northeast. It covers seven states for them. And we have a couple of callers waiting. We're going to go ahead to the callers. We'll try to check back in and see if we can get back to the issue of the local emergency responders and the capacity of the infrastructure in Searsport to respond to something like this. But we also want to shift from the safety issues to the local economy issues and other issues that have been expressed, concerns have been expressed about before we wrap up here tonight. So go ahead, caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from? And what would you like to say?
Hi, my name is Phyllis Coelho, and I'm from Belfast. And my concern is really, certainly everyone makes really good points with all the concerns, but my concern is what will the construction itself and the pollution from that construction and other pollutants, especially from the flare, the gas flare, what will that have on the wildlife? Especially, you know, up and down the Penobscot, we have nesting eagles, ospreys, their eggs, their fledglings, and other birds. You know, Maine is on the migratory path, and there's also ducks, especially eiders and loons, who already have such high levels of mercury, lead, and other contaminants. And I guess my point is to please have an environmental impact statement, especially on the wildlife in that's around the Penobscot and in the Penobscot. And that's what my major concern is right at this point.
Okay, well, thank you for your call, Phyllis. Does anyone want to respond to that before we move to the next call?
Sure.
Okay, let's let Asterix say something. She hasn't spoken as much, and then we'll get to you, Bud.
Well, Phyllis, what you've done is you've opened up the response to what people that don't live in Searsport have to say about this. And right now, if you write to Jay Clements of the Army Corps of Engineers and ask for a full environmental impact study, that will be part of the study. It's both human and animal studies. We need that impact study, and one of the things that came up is DCP has said that they're just waiting moments until they get their Army Corps approval. Well, actually, there's a new public comment period that's opened up. So ask for that study in a letter by February 28th. Everybody should.
And they focus on the wetlands mitigation piece, though, right?
Well, I mean, the environmental impact study, they have a choice of whether they do a full one or a streamlined one. And we want to ask for a full environmental impact. And that affects economy, it affects air quality, light, both day and night, and all of that sort of thing. So it's pollution to the environment at all levels. That's the full environmental impact study.
Okay. But you wanted to say something?
My understanding was that those environmental impact studies had to be filed in order to get the permits that they already have with the state DEP.
No. Actually, Jay Clements just put out a letter that was read at the Searsport town office, and there's been a new time period opened asking for an environmental impact study or asking people to respond, and that's part of it.
The Army Corps of Engineers letter says, in anticipation of unavoidable impacts to aquatic resources, the applicant is proposing compensatory mitigation and has agreed to compensate for the project's unavoidable wetland impacts by providing funds towards Maine's Natural Resources Conservation Fund and LUE fee program for stream impacts by implementing a stream restoration enhancement project nearby, basically replacing an undersized culvert and also paying into this fund, and that's at least in part what they're seeking comments on, unless that's been expanded. Peter?
Well, yeah, I think the issue that surrounds this new comment period, actually I think it goes to the 29th. We've got an extra day in. But this is because the Army Corps of Engineers, bless them, has realized that there are serious concerns that were not addressed by the environmental Department of Environmental Protection permit. And in fact, the company has been pushing for the Army Corps of Engineers to just rubber stamp this thing through so it can go straight to Searsport's planning board, and their hope is, and then that would be the end of it. They'd be ready to start building. The Army Corps of Engineers has recognized that there are serious deficiencies in the Department of Environmental Protection application. And
the EPA or DEP?
I'm sorry, the DEP,
okay.
the state agency. And we've all been arguing this, and we're glad to see that affirmed. And one of the earlier callers made a point about it, made a reference to the DEP that we have today. DCP people may have raved about, oh, they had never been through such a tough process, and they were being held to very high standards, and by golly, they were going to deliver. But in fact, that's nonsense. There are huge deficiencies, and that may have something to do, as the previous earlier caller pointed out, that the head of the DEP is Governor LePage's handpicked person. She's Patricia Ajo. She's with one of the biggest law firms in the state previously. And for 9 years, she was the chief lobbyist in Maine, in Augusta, for the American Petroleum Institute, or the oil and gas lobby. So it's significant that, you know, at least we're now having opportunity to address some of these concerns. And the concerns can be about how people feel their lives might be impacted, how they're already seeing how real estate agents are in terror, don't want to even address this because they're scared to death of what this is going to do to property values. There are already some very, very obvious things going. And in our own town, we have this terrible divisiveness because some people are, quite frankly, quite excited about the possibility of jobs, and other people are seeing, you know, that it's not going to happen. This is false, and we're all going to be hurt by it.
Okay, we have two callers waiting. Go ahead, caller. First name, where are you calling from, please?
My name is Phyllis, and I'm calling from Searsport, and I had a comment about the gentleman from Eastport. Statement that we would not be concerned if the tank were located there, and that is absolutely untrue. There's nothing of this size on the East Coast anywhere except in Tampa, Florida. And it only takes, going on to the safety issue, it only takes one incident of this magnitude to change the safety record of DCP from 1995 or 1998, whatever they want to say. It only takes one moment, one human error, to alter our lives forever. I have another comment and then a question. The comment is about the property taxes that DCP has stated they will be paying to the town, which seems to make people feel that the property taxes will be diminished in some way, shared, that we will all benefit by having lower property taxes, when the reality is those taxes go to the state, and then the revenue-sharing formula is altered at the Augusta level. And we will not see any benefits or any reduction to our taxes as a result of this facility. My question is to Mr. Rivers, and I would ask him, how would the Searsport Fire Department alert the populace if an event occurs when we have no system in place to alert people now, much less for such a huge facility?
All right, thank you for your call, Phyllis. Bud?
Warning systems. We have local public radio announcements. We have, if there was a major incident where we thought it was needed, we could call the state and use the EAS system. We have for all of the facilities that we now have emergency plans for. If we had incidents, they have, and I'm not sure how accurate they are now with people moving in up, we have phone lists that we can call people. We are implementing, because companies have to pay for this, but the municipalities don't, a reverse 911 system. Will be going out to anybody that we think is, we're going to be looking at our hazards and identifying zones of vulnerable populations, and we'll divide up our notification systems that way. We currently have as one of our mechanisms is using fire department people to go door-to-door if we need to, or getting volunteers go door-to-door. And I have radios that we can use to communicate between the people that are giving notifications. It's all part of the warning system that's built into our emergency operating plan.
How many first responders do you have in Searsport with the volunteer fire department and, I assume, ambulance as well?
We've got 33 firefighters right now. We've got, I don't know, close to that number. It's up and down a little bit, somewhere between 20 and 30 ambulance people. We've got, I think, 7 police officers. And if we need more help, we have mutual aid agreements with all of the surrounding towns. We're a signatory on the Waldo County mutual aid agreement and on the statewide emergency. And if we have these kinds of notifications that are necessary, we'd set up the EOC, we'd call through the dispatch system, and those are all the mechanisms we have in place right now for notifying residents that there is a hazard that affects them.
Okay, it was one of the concerns that's been expressed was that there was a tank fire last summer and that people who lived real close by weren't notified. So that's, I assume, the impetus for working on this plan, getting it improved?
No, this plan has been in place. A lot of people that expressed those concerns were not at that scene. I was. Part of what we did was we implemented the incident command system. Our fire chief looked at it. As soon as he heard where it was, he said, is this a tank that's got fuel in it or something in it, or is it an empty tank? We didn't know. So he called the wider area mutual aids. That's why there were seven towns involved. We got down there. We found out that it was a tank that had been cleaned out by, I can't remember the name of the company, but they're professionals at making safe working environments in hazardous, you know, Clean Harbors. They came down and they cleaned the tank out. What had happened is they were welding on the outside of the tank. There is a floating, all of those, most of the new tanks down there, and I think all the ones that have the flammable liquids in them, have a floating roof that keeps air from getting mixed with the flammable liquids so that we don't get combustible or explosive mixtures. And this one had a rubber seal that went around the side of the tank, and they somehow got the welding heat too close to the rubber seal and set it on fire. I've heard people make claims that we had water problems down there that night. We didn't have, we had some, took us a while to get hooked up in some cases, but we put 80,000 gallons of water in there just because we couldn't go in the tank to see what we were doing. So
okay.
We put the fire out, and it was under control within probably a couple hours.
Okay. Astrid, if you want to say something real quick, then we need to get to some calls.
Real quickly, there was a problem with that fire, and Irving wouldn't allow the Searsport Fire Department to come down in. They held them up at the gates. That's how good the plan is.
No.
That's what was
incorrect.
In the report.
That's what in whose report? The only thing that was a problem with that was there was a notification problem between the welding contracting company that was welding on the tank and the gate agent who, when they called 911, he didn't call the guy in the office to tell him that they had a fire so he could open the gate for us. And the chief had to tell him that that was the case when he got there. All of the rest of us got into that fire. Well, I was driving a truck, and I got in there.
It reads differently in the report.
Yes, and it shows that, you know, problems, accidents happen. Things go wrong. And, you know, we're certainly, you know, we certainly saw it in that incident. It got very, very dicey, and I wasn't there. But I've talked to three people who, and three separate people who were shocked at how hysterical the scene sounded listening to the radio traffic. That fire, even though it was fortunately only in a neoprene gasket, that fire took 5 hours, practically 5 hours, to bring under control, and six or seven area communities had to come in to help out.
Okay,
and
Let's move from this particular fire to back to the LPG issue and take a couple of phone calls. Go ahead, caller. Where are you calling from? What's your first name, and what would you like to say?
Good evening. Thank you. My name's Kathy, and I'm a taxpaying resident of Searsport. I don't want to make a speech. I have one question. Where is your evidence that DCP does not have the expertise to build and run this plant safely?
How do you prove a negative?
I think that there's concern about that, and we don't have proof that they can run a facility of this size safely. We're talking 23 million gallons. It doesn't belong in 600 feet of within 600 feet of houses. And more than that, we're talking about changing the entire scale of the industrial region. How can that be fit in with 5,000 feet from GAC?
All right.
And the other factor, the 500-pound gorilla in the corner, is the fact is that terrorism is a reality. And the terrorism is such a reality, maybe that's why the Coast Guard has decided to slow things down a little bit and not give DCP the quickie permit, because the Coast Guard immediately started putting in controls on LPG after 9/11. They made special rule changes in which they didn't have to go through the usual process, because they thought the concern. They talked about down in Portsmouth, where there is an LPG facility, and their concern about LPG ship catching fire or even blowing up. And then they put in rules that hadn't previously existed. The fact is, terrorism is a reality.
Okay. I think we've been covering the safety issue a lot, and we still haven't even gotten to the issue of the trucks and all the truck traffic and whether or not the trucks are explosive. But we do want to take some time and talk about the local economy as well. We've got two more callers waiting. We're going to go ahead and take those calls back to back without response, and then we're going to at least do a go around about the local economy and the impacts that would have. And but if you're going somewhere, take your headphones off. You're attached here. And so let's take those two calls and then move on to local economy. Go ahead, caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, good evening. Thanks for speaking with me. My name is Jeannie, and I'm calling from Searsport.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I'd like to tell you I'm not opposed to propane nor the need for the diversification of fuel needs for our country. However, there is nothing in the proposed plan from DCP that's community, environmentally, tourist, or safety-friendly. None of these things have been considered in the current proposal. There is a recent incident out on Route 9, I believe it was, where a very seasoned Weber tanker truck was hit by another huge rig, closed down the road for 12 hours, and that could never have been handled here in Searsport. The reports that the police said was that it was amazing this was not a major catastrophe. The other issue is there is, as we've discussed earlier, no guarantee of local jobs due to equal opportunity employment. And just this morning on WABI-TV, if you listened to it at 5:30 a.m. as we do, the scam of the Oxford Casino was exposed for the fraud that it has proposed. They had guaranteed 3,000 jobs to Mainers, which has now been reduced down to approximately 300, and the key 22, quote, high-paying jobs that are skilled jobs are posted outside of the state of Maine so that they can bring candidates in-state who are better qualified for these positions. So that does make me a little skeptical about these 10 to 15, $50,000 to $70,000 jobs that DCP is proposing. And I have to say, you know, we may not be the targets of overseas terrorism. We've got enough homeland terrorism to be worried about. And a tank, the magnitude and size proposed within the proximity of GAC is just insanity. And, you know, if you think about it, DCP would never have proposed something like this in Portland because there are many more voices to speak against it. They would have proposed it here in Searsport or down east, but never in a place like Portland or Boston where they would have had a much bigger fight. DCP, in closing, has mocked our scale model that Thanks But No Tanks has produced, yet they have yet to produce a scale model of their own depicting just the grand scheme of what they're proposing, what it will do to the local economy. We on the whole mid-coast region from Camden to down east to Blue Hill and Castine and the islands depend upon tourism. We've just started opening up B&Bs here again in Searsport. Do you think tourists are going to come here to see our big stack or go to the Penobscot Narrow Bridge to see the same stack? So in closing, I'd just like to thank you for hearing my concerns and to really urge everybody to stop the divisiveness, give us our ability to have our moratorium and have us all have due process, which as American citizens we're entitled to.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your call, Jeannie. And let's go ahead to the next caller real quick, and then we're going to shift gears towards that economic impact a little bit. Go ahead, caller. First name, and where are you calling from, please?
Hello, this is Yo in Tremont.
Hey, Yo.
I listened to some of the hearings on WERU on this subject, and it became pretty clear that not only are the responses to environmental and catastrophic problems inadequate, but the company evidently plans to go ahead with this project whether or not local communities approve. And that's evidence that this is just, Searsport is the latest footprint of corporate globalism, and the only reason they've chosen Searsport is because it looks profitable on their balance sheet, and the only way to prevent it is to make it too expensive for them, and the way to do that is to resist. Thank you very much for putting on this program.
Thank you for your call, Yo. And for those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to WERU-FM. Tonight, we've preempted our regular programming to have this special on the proposed LPG terminal, massive 138-foot tall, 22.7 million gallon liquefied propane gas facility that a company called DCP Midstream is proposing to build in Searsport. Our guests in the studio are Searsport Emergency Management Director Bud Rivers. He supports the proposal, and also Peter Tabor and Astrid Tangway, both of whom live in Searsport as well, and oppose the terminal. DCP Midstream declined our invitation to send someone, so instead we've been playing some clips from what they've said at their public hearings or public meetings about the issue. I want to play the clip with what they had to say about jobs, and that'll be a lead-in into our discussion of these 12, 13, 14 maybe full-time jobs and the temporary construction work, which they've promised to local people, and whether or not that offsets the impacts on tourism and local businesses.
So this project, what it would generate is 12 to 15 permanent jobs, and I understand that there's questions whether or not they'd be locally hired or so and such. They absolutely will be locally hired. That is the goal. That is what we want. We actually have some of our folks from Auburn here tonight at our other terminal who were locally hired individuals as well. We led that project. The salaries averaging fully loaded $70,000 a year. We have a pretty comprehensive benefits package. We have a 401k retirement. The match is 6% dollar for dollar up to the 6% in the federal cap. We have medical, dental, vision. We have a matching donations program. Does anybody know what that is? Basically, if you want to choose a charity of your choice, you write a check. We'll match the check up to $5,000. We're pretty big in communities that we reside in. We would love to reside here with you. We have a pretty good rigorous training program. Some of the guys here tonight are going to talk about some of that around our employees. On the other side, on the economic development side, you can imagine that when you build a project of this nature, you need people to help you do it. And we rely on construction firms, many of who are here tonight. We actually struck an agreement, a community workforce benefit agreement, with the Maine State Building and Construction Trades Council. Some of the membership is here tonight. Chris, I don't know if you want to take a few seconds and talk about what that means.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everybody for coming. What that means is a community workforce benefit agreement. What that does is with the developers, and we go out and approach all developers that want to come into the state of Maine, because we want to promote good construction jobs with good livable wages that provide health care, some sort of training programs in place, and some sort of health care retirement plan, so that they're not $8 an hour construction laborers out there digging ditches or lugging block and brick, because a lot of it goes on in the state. And I'm born and raised right here in Winterport, right up the river. And like I said, I've worked in these communities all over. But this community workforce benefit agreement, they've agreed to hire local workers through the building and construction trades. We're going to take in some younger, or if they need the training, we're going to train them. We're going to put them to work. They're going to work on this facility. They're going to get a health care for them and their family. They're going to get a good livable wage. That's what a community workforce benefit agreement is. And that's what we're trying to preach to all the developers.
So folks who already are working and running businesses in Searsport expressed and surrounding areas expressed concerns at these public meetings about the impact on their businesses and whether or not these jobs that would be created would offset the jobs that they potentially would be impacted negatively by the loss of tourism in the area. Astrid Tangway is a business owner in Searsport along Route 1. Do you want to say a little bit about your business and what you think the impact might be on tourism-related businesses in the area?
I'd love to. I have two businesses. My husband and I have Searsport Shores Campground, and we have Fiber College of Maine. Fiber College is a four-day event, and the campground runs from the beginning of May until the beginning of October. In any given time in the summer, I have 300-400 people staying with me. And when those people come, they're coming to experience what Maine sells. And Maine puts millions of dollars into their advertising budget to sell, come to the beautiful, pristine coast, see our night skies, participate in our outdoor activities. That's why they're coming here. And when my guests come, they go to the restaurants and they buy bottles of wine and lobster. When those construction workers that they're talking about stay, they buy hamburgers. So how long can a restaurant stay in business if they take that kind of cut in pay? My guests come to get away from the noise and the light pollution. We're already feeling the impact of Mack Point growing as Irving grew. If they add the number of trucks, the 144 trucks that they're permitted to put on the road, that means there's going to be a new truck driving by every 5 minutes, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. That's what the math works out to be. That's going to devastate our tourism. If the tourists decide that it's not worth coming up through Searsport because of the truck traffic and because it's not pretty, the ones heading to Bar Harbor, which is our main money, are going to go up through Bangor and cut across. When they do that, everybody from Augusta to Belfast, up to Ellsworth and down the other side of the peninsula, all lose. That's an economic impact of the entire region. And tourism isn't just about lodging facilities and restaurants. They buy gas, they buy groceries, they buy books, they buy handcrafts. Those are all things that let us survive during the winter and enjoy the life we have. And plus, they don't do that much damage. When a tourist goes by, it takes 9,600 cars to do the damage on the road that one big truck does. And we have to pay the taxes to keep those roads in shape. So that's just one example. When a tourist uses a kayak or uses a boat on the bay, it doesn't cost taxpayers any money. But yet we're expected to pay taxpayer dollars to dredge the port. My business, if I have any trouble, I have to pay all the expenses. If Mack Point has trouble, they launch a bond. These are all reasons that the economic impact needs to be looked at for the entire region.
And one of the owners of Anglers and another local business as well spoke at the meeting and said that the total number of jobs that they might potentially lose there if they were impacted by loss of tourism would be greater than the number of jobs that would be created by the facility?
Well, Amy has 60 people on staff at any time. The little hotel just beyond it, the Yard Arm, she has 10 to 12 people on staff. And my other question would be, why is it that my job is so expendable? And all the other people that have invested their entire lives, I've been here 20 years, I know plenty of others that have been a lot longer, some have just come in the last couple years. They've taken every penny they've earned and bet it on themselves. They bet it on Searsport, they bet it on the region, and they bet it on their work ethic. And we're being told that all of us somehow aren't as important as the 12 to 15 high school level jobs that are going to be created. And once those jobs are filled and we've killed tourism in the region, then what's left? Who else is going to get a job and what are they going to be doing?
Do we have callers waiting, Joel? We do. So thanks for your patience. And the phone number, if you'd like to be on deck to call in this last half hour, is 1-866-625-9378. I haven't been giving it out very much because we haven't had a phone line open for most of the night. Go ahead, caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from? And what would you like to say?
Hi, I'm John from Jefferson.
Hi, John.
And I've got several quick things. I know time is of the essence, so I'll try to be short here. With reference to the economic issue, the major question, of course, is who benefits? And clearly, it's this mega corporation. That's clear enough. A couple other things that I think have not been brought up in the safety issue is he said that it would have to be minus 44 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, what happens to that gas if there's a problem with the cooling system? gas expands as it gets hotter, even up to zero, for example, which is still very cold. So we know in Maine that we have power outages, and there can be such things as generator failures when they back up.
That's what the flare is for, John. That's why flaring off the gas. Well, that's what the DCP said.
What DCP said and what happens.
Let's answer that question, then we'll get back to you, John. We're not going to cut you off here.
Okay, good.
Yeah. The minus 44 degrees, as they pointed out, DCP pointed out, and as I checked by running my own calculations, they do not need the refrigeration system to keep it cold. It is a refrigerant. It basically cools itself. The major volume cools itself by compressing it into... They take the gas, they put it through a compressor, just like in your refrigerator, mm-hmm. compresses the gas. That cycle that they go through is what cools it. They will have emergency power systems to power that system in case of a long-term power loss. The flare is there in case they have a failure in both systems, and they have to vent some of that gas off, and they've licensed themselves for then what you would do is the gas escaped, you would burn it off so that it doesn't create a hazard in the air.
Amy, okay, did you know that the application says that the backup generators are not capable of keeping the tank cold?
They're insufficient.
Okay, John, yes, go ahead.
Okay, another thing quickly is, that's an interesting response, okay, the other thing, if the gas goes out, he said earlier that it hugs the ground, which would mean, I would think, that it would lead to asphyxiation of anybody within that area or animals, both domestic and wild, and anybody in low ground, tough luck, you're going to be breathing propane. So I'll leave that one. And one final thing. Years ago, Eisenhower said anybody who commits U.S. troops to a landmass in Asia ought to have his head examined. I would think that this applies to this catastrophic proposal as well. I just see that it's all the very good response from and the wisdom from the people who have called in, I think, overwhelms any suggestion that it might be beneficial to Maine. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for your call, John. Let's take one more call, and then we're going to shift gears again just to make sure we cover everything tonight. We'll take this call, and then I want to talk about the moratorium. Go ahead, caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from, please?
My name is Daniel. I'm calling from Searsport.
Hey, Daniel.
I called really to discuss emergency response capacity, but in terms of economic impact, I wonder what the conversation Searsport residents would be having if someone from Las Vegas, for example, were proposing to put adult entertainment into the former Rolly's facility and offered, you know, twice as many jobs. You know, I seem to think we'd be having a much different conversation, one that would be focused on the character of the town. So that being said, in terms of emergency response, I appreciate Bud showing up and his experience in particular and for all the time he dedicates to the town and the people of Searsport. I would like to point out quickly, if you look online to the Toronto gas explosion, best footage in particular, there's an explosion that many people are familiar with already. That explosion was the result of response by the fifth largest fire department in North America. I spoke directly to a commander who almost over 600 men report to this gentleman, and he spoke with me at length about that incident, and I can tell you that it was over 30 vehicles responded and over 120 men were at the scene within a short period of time. All of their effort, all of their training, all of their budget resulted in the explosion that you can see online if you Google Toronto gas explosion, best footage. That's what I have.
Great. Thank you for your call, Daniel. I guess we have one more caller waiting. We'll take that, and then we are going to stop calls for just a minute or you can call in, but you'll just be on hold for a while to shift gears. Go ahead, caller. First name, where are you calling from, please?
Yeah, thanks. This is David. I'm just driving through scenic Stockton Springs at the moment. There's a beautiful, just past full moon in the sky there. And I listened to Yo's commentary, and I could not believe that this might actually happen. I could not believe there was even a chance that this thing might go through. I live, you know, across the bay in Brooklyn, out of harm's way, except unless there was a big explosion. And we do make some tourist income over there, which I imagine would be impacted. That's no great loss to me, but a lot of my neighbors would really miss it. Why don't we just decide not to do this thing and turn Searsport into an experiment and a testimonial to how we can do the alternative in spades and, you know, work at taking maybe the whole town off the grid. It could be done. It's not hard to do. And if the town would decide to put its energies behind something like that, instead, think of the input to the tourist industry, for example. Towns around the country coming to see how Searsport did it. How did you do it? Well, we had this big catastrophe almost, and it got us mobilized to actually research doing a really good job of an alternative approach. And so we did, and here's what it is. I mean, it's a challenge. The gauntlet has been thrown down, and I would really be happy to help pick it up.
All right. Thank you for your call, David. I want to play just, I think, two really short clips from DCP's public meeting in this transition to the next topic. This first one, Roz Elliott, their public relations person or public affairs person, is challenged about a comment that she made on Voice of Maine right just prior to that hearing. This is called Summer People Comment, Joel.
My name's Harold McGlaughlin. I live up back. I live on property that's been in my family since before the Revolutionary War, and I'd like to keep its value. I heard on the radio the other day someone saying that the only people that are opposed to this tank are summer people who are worried about their views. Did anyone else hear that?
Yes.
Who said that? Do you know? Are you, any of you guys? Who?
Yeah.
You said that. You still stand by that?
You know what? I think it's taken out of context, but I'd like to share with you. Yeah. I would love to. Thank you. What I really intended, what was meant by that comment was, I've got my mic, thanks. This is about Searsport. We want to make sure that the folks in Searsport have the vote. And we understand there's a lot of people who are coming from other areas, but we know at the end of the day. So if that has in any way been misconstrued, I apologize. I apologize if that offended anybody. Sure.
I believe you said a few summer people.
I don't think I like the word.
Okay, so, and then influencing the vote in Searsport next. Let's hear that clip, since they're very concerned about what Searsport people think.
Do you think it's appropriate that DCP Searsport gets involved in a local moratorium?
Okay, great. Bill, let's break it down again. Supply and how that works.
Right. I might start from the back, and okay. Sometimes you work backwards, it works better. But as far as the moratorium is concerned, that's a local issue needed to be decided by the local residents here.
But you're
paying people. You're getting involved in our local issue. You, an outsider, paying outsiders go door to door. To change our minds, to pit neighbor against neighbor. This is as divisive as it was in Wisconsin.
We're interested in the sentiments of the community.
What?
So,
in affecting the sentiments, we're influencing the sentiments.
You say vote no.
So what that last person was yelling out, you say vote no, they had stickers that they were handing out at the meeting that said vote no on them. And the accusations were being made that they were hiring people to go from Searsport to go canvassing their neighbors to vote no on this moratorium. So in the time we have remaining, who wants to explain the moratorium and also what DCP is doing in terms of getting involved in the local politics here? They say they want to let Searsport people decide, and that the summer people, apparently they've discounted, but they're definitely trying to play a role in this themselves.
Well, I can tell you that Thanks But No Tank, the group that Peter and I are with, and probably with about 35 other people meeting regularly, we hired a lawyer and asked him to write a moratorium. He asked us what we wanted to do, and we said we want to have enough time to make sure that our ordinances and all of our regulations are in place and that we understand the proposal. So he explained to us that a moratorium generally just stops something. And we said we didn't want to stop something. We want to ask questions and find things out. So the lawyer, Ed Bearer, said to us, then you need to create a committee, and it should either be 7 or 9 people. Now, I've been listening to Roz Elliott attack us, saying that this is a slippery slope, and people have said that Astrid Tangwe is taking away the local government control. Well, I am Astrid Tangwe, and I am not trying to take away local control. We created a moratorium that specifies a 9-person panel. It was 9 people so that we knew we'd always have a quorum, and we said that we want 3 people on that panel. The selectmen could choose 3 people, and then 3 people would be chosen at random. We are not confident that the DCP's money, the $14 billion that they have access to, is going to let it be a fair issue. That's why we want 3 people. We want to make sure that there are people on there that represent environmental impact, economic impact, and Peter, I forget the third.
Well, that's good enough, those two.
Yeah. We want to know that our issues are going to be examined while we take time to find out if this is a good thing for Searsport.
So the moratorium would be voted on, whether or not the moratorium takes effect, would be voted on in your at your town meeting in March, and it would be a 6-month moratorium and would to look at the issue of the town ordinances more closely, and these committee members would be part of that process.
Right. It'd be 6 months, but because 4 months have already gone by, we'd only have 2 months to do it.
But I know you want to comment on this.
Okay. I've read the moratorium a couple times, and I got to say I'm speaking as a citizen now, not in my other role. There is a provision in this moratorium that would allow this special interest group nominated or participated, acting through Astrid Tangwe, to call special town meetings to act on ordinances. That violates 2 existing town ordinances, and I believe, and I haven't checked with the lawyers yet, but it's the only people who can, on the Maine state law, call a special town meeting are the duly elected officials of the town. And there's language in here that would force that decision.
Are you more concerned about, and I'll let you respond to that, Astrid, but are you more concerned about the Thanks But No Tanks people being involved in the process than you are about the DCP midstream people being involved in the lobbying and the hiring people and their part in it, or are you equally concerned about each? If you say special interest group, are you concerned about both of those special interests?
I will defend everybody's right, and I swore an oath as an officer in the United States Navy to defend the Constitution. Everybody has the right to speak in public in any way they choose.
Okay.
I will not, I cannot support anything that transfers the authority that is granted by law to our elected officials to any other group.
Okay, quick response, Astrid. We've only got 10 minutes left in the program.
This is a legal moratorium. We double-checked after we were accused by DCP. And what it is it's a committee of the town, and all of the meetings will be public meetings. The voters have the opportunity, and it's the selectmen that decide finally. We aren't doing anything but acting as a town committee.
I didn't hear a denial with DCP that they were paying people to canvass. So does that mean that they actually are, or did they just not get around to denying that?
They're paying people $100 a day. That's what people who are getting paid $100 a day are saying in any case.
You have confirmation. Okay, so people are saying that they're being paid
to canvass. Yeah, they're people who are not particularly partisan, but here's an opportunity to make $100 a day. This is not they're not the same thing as, you know, a group in Searsport who feels on the other side of the coin from the TBNT people.
Okay. Okay. We have two callers waiting. Let's try to take those calls quickly as we wrap up here. Go ahead, caller, first name, and where are you calling from?
Hi, William Nichols from Stockton Springs.
Thanks for calling, William.
Hi. And I'm just calling because Phyllis Coelho called earlier. I wanted to respond to that. I'm a birder at Stockton Springs, and I know Phyllis. I just wanted to make sure there's some kind of list. I don't know if there's a list of species that have been found in that location where the tank is being proposed, or if there's going to be a list. I called Jay Clement and spoke with him, but I know this is kind of jumping back a little bit in the discussion, but I know if anyone had a comment on that.
And I know Ron Huber's blog has some information about that particular patch of wetlands there. Is that PenobscotBayWatch.org?
It is.
So people could check that as well. Go ahead, caller. We have another caller. What's your first name? Where are you calling from, please?
My name is Jason. I'm from North Searsport. And I was astonished that my emergency management here does not know the simple facts about the refrigeration cycle. That anybody from a technical school who's studying heating and cooling would understand that compression of a substance like propane raises the temperature, just like compressing the freon in your car's air conditioning system raises the temperature. And it's only when the substance is decompressed or released that the temperature goes down. The compressor at this facility is intended to keep the substance in a liquid state, and when it looks like it's threatening to become a gaseous state, then they flare it off. They release the pressure that lowers the temperature, and it puts the potential catastrophe on hold. So that's the principle, and I think if he reflects on his training in engineering, then he may remember that that's the way it works. And anybody who knows about air conditioning in a car or in a building knows that that's called the cooling cycle.
All right, thank you for your call.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I will. I wasn't clear in my. And I didn't try to go through a total engineering explanation of the cooling cycle.
Thank you for that.
You are correct. The boiling cools. It takes when the liquid turns to a gas, it absorbs energy. It is taken. That energy is allowed. That gas is allowed to come out of the tank, go through the compressor, get put back into the tank as a liquid. That's the refrigeration cycle. You're right. It does that, but it does not require a separate, what I was trying to get across is it does not require a separate refrigeration cycle to keep the tank cool. That the propane is itself the refrigerant. So I don't have to have like a big, huge refrigeration plant to cool this tank down.
And we appreciate that you're trying to cover some really complicated issues in a really short bursts of periods of time here tonight, that everyone's trying to get that information out. We have a couple more callers. Go ahead. What's your first name? Where are you calling from, please?
Hello, Amy. My name is Peter. I'm calling from Belfast.
Hi, Peter.
Amy, I've been following this debate for several months and been to most of the meetings and presentations, and first of all, I applaud your station for giving the opportunity for debate tonight. But my comment would be one regarding the integrity of this company and ducking out from the opportunity to engage in the debate tonight. I think it speaks volumes the way they seem to fear public scrutiny of the project. To my mind, as a reporter and journalist myself, no administration, no company, no person, no institution should fear public scrutiny if, in fact, their program is honorable and beneficial and safe. The fact that they would avoid participating in your program tonight says more than any spokesperson or public relations person could ever pronounce. I think it's ludicrous that they would put the public safety director of a small town in the stranded position that Mr. Rivers is in tonight to be quasi spokesman and a point person for the project when they clearly had the opportunity to present their own experts. Witnesses. I haven't really heard many callers in favor of the project. There seem to be a lot of negatives. I certainly don't support the project from what I've seen and heard so far. But I would encourage residents of the whole Mid-Coast area to remain vigilant and involved. It's only through scrutiny that we gain understanding, and through understanding that we either support or oppose the project. And this is a necessary process in the public arena. It's the only way to gain confidence in the citizens, that is when they're fully informed.
All right, thank you for your call, Peter. And we're running out of time, so we're just going to, we'll take one more tiny phone call, and as Joel is signaling to me, and then I want to leave time for just a quick last comment from our guests. Go ahead, caller, first name, where you're calling from, and if you could quickly say what's on your mind.
Good evening. I'm AJ. I'm from North Searsport, and I'm just calling to praise Bud highly for, you know, staying level-headed and holding his ground in this 2 hours of what has appeared to be a bombardment, and as I say, applaud him for standing his ground and doing his job.
All right. Thanks, Bud. Thank you for your call, AJ. And yes, we appreciate Bud being here as well. Bud Rivers is the emergency management director of Searsport. Asterisk Tangway is a small business owner in town, and Searsport resident Peter Tabor, Searsport resident as well. We did invite people from DCP Midstream to participate. They chose not to, and we have been advertising pretty heavily for a week now but we're going to talk about both sides. So people from both sides were welcomed and invited to call. Last comments from each of you as we go around the table. Who wants to start?
Let me start just briefly. I want to say two things. One to Peter, I'm not a point man for anybody or anything. I speak my mind and my mind only. And the other thing, I would like to encourage anyone that has any concerns about our emergency planning process, our emergency plans, as I did, and I met with Astrid will tell you, I met with them for 6 hours. I got two things to say. One is, I'm in the process of reviewing that plan. I think the first selectman gave me 30 days to have it on his desk with any revisions that are going to be made. And that we have...
Yeah, 30 seconds.
As we have part of that process, and you'll see it in the town report, open positions in our emergency operations center organization. They're not open. They're where I'm only one deep. And I'd like to have volunteers to make me 2 or 3 deep in case we
have in touch with you.
Have them get in touch with me or the town office.
All right. Thank you. But Asterisk Tangway.
We have got several presentations lined up. So if people are interested, I hope they'll come. Tomorrow night at 6:30, we'll be at the Camden Public Library. On February 14th, we'll be in the Ellsworth Public Library at 7 o'clock. And on March 7th, we'll be in the Searsport Town Hall. Everybody's welcome. We welcome anyone's questions and hope to keep it a regional issue.
All right. And Peter Tabor, final word.
Just a little wrap up. I just wanted to bring up the issue of scale. I'm sure Bud and the fellows he works with are more than competent when it comes to the sort of things we have, the kind of problems we have in a small town. But it's, I'm sure they can handle, they know what to do with a propane fire when it involves tank outside your house, or even one of the many tank trucks that we may expect with turning onto our highways. We're expecting, if this goes through, a 35% to 50% increase in truck traffic coming in and out of Mack Point of big tanker trucks, big dangerous trucks suddenly turning into the middle of the road. However, nobody has real experience with what do you do when a 23 million gallon tank goes wrong, and it's absurd to expect
a small town fire department to begin to know what to do, let alone get people out. It's folly to believe that.
Okay. And thank you all for being our guests tonight, and thank you to Larry for giving up 2 hours of Jazz Straight Ahead this week. We'll be back to our regular programming. Next week you'll have jazz, not LPG explosions, to think about in this time frame. And thank you to Joel Mann for engineering this program tonight. I'm Amy Brown. Thanks for listening to your community radio station, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org.